Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by banging these bongos.
Crazy.
Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 172 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. And before I go on to tell you about this week's guest, a big shout out to our Patreon supporters, without whom this podcast would not be able to be created. When we started the podcast in 2018, we decided to fund it ourselves so that we wasn't dictated to by the advertisers. But obviously it's hard to proceed with no funds, so we set up a Patreon page. And if you like what you hear and you want to support the podcast, you can go over to Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll find a Linktree drop-down box which will direct you to our Patreon page. And from as little as £3 a month, which is pretty much a cup of coffee, you can support the podcast. And if you don't want to do that or you're not able, that's absolutely fine because this content is free for everyone. But back to this week's episode. Today, I'm going to introduce you to Kennard Phillips. Kennard Phillips is a collaboration between Peter Kennard and Kat Phillips. They've been working together since 2002 to produce art in response to the invasion of Iraq. But their work has now evolved to confront power and war across the globe. Their work is made for the streets, for the gallery, for the web, newspapers and magazines. And they even lead workshops to develop people's skills and help them express their thought on what's happening through the world in visual means. The work is made as a critical tool that connects the international movements for social and political change. They don't see their work as separate to the social and political movements that are confronting established political and economic systems. They see it as part of those movements, the visual arm of protest. They want their work to be used by people as part of their own activism, not just as pictures on walls to contemplate. To facilitate this, as well as selling their limited edition prints on the site, enabling them to fund the making of their work, there's also a free download page of images with a voluntary contribution to the International Solidarity Movement. Pretty cool, eh? Well, Kennard Phillips have been on my radar to talk to for quite some time. Well, late last year, I'd done some filming with global activism group Apolitical. And a few months later, they had a large function in West London, which I was invited to. I popped in initially just for an hour or so. And one of the producers there asked me if I knew Kennard Phillips. I said I'd obviously known of them, but I'd not met them before. So he took me over to introduce me to Pete and Kat. Well, that popping in for an hour turned into the rest of the night, and what a great night it was. And that evening, I asked them if they'd consider coming on the podcast. And a couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure of popping down their studio to record it in person. So please, come and join me in that conversation with Peter Kennard and Kat Phillips.
So I popped in, went downstairs, and just as I got to the bottom of the stairs in the basement and walked around into like the lower room, the cleaner put the third black bin liner down in a row. And then she's gone back into this room. Then I've gone back upstairs. And I was just joking. I went, how much are the Gavin Turks downstairs? And she went, we haven't got any Gavin Turks. I said, there's three of them in a row down there. And she went, no. And then she's gone downstairs. And I was just about to say, I'm only joking. I thought she'd laugh, you know. And she came back. She went, oh, I do apologise, but they are actually bin bags.
Yeah,
as if I didn't know. There are a set of questions that I ask each artist. The first would be to Kennard Phillips.
Yeah.
How would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
Well, take down the establishment with pictures.
I mean, it's always difficult to explain that, you know, obviously that's why one does it in pictures, but I would say we want to make something that's really got a political edge to it, and that it is a form of protest in its way, you know, about what's going on in the world, and to get and that can communicate beyond the art world. You know, it's not conceptually complex in that way. I think it's more about making an image that takes things that people know but completely transforms them by, you know, by adding things and taking things away and making something that actually has a edge to try and counteract all the shit that we're being bombarded with, basically.
Much of it. I was going to say at the moment, but it's pretty much non-stop.
It's non-stop, yeah.
And I think quite often we're always working on something that's happening sort of right now when we're responding to it. And quite often in the newspapers we're getting bombarded with this take on an event. So let's say, for example, Ukraine, and you start reading the news or listening to the news or watching the news about what's happening. And I always quite often feel like I'm being pushed into one way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
And that's really frustrating. So quite often what we're making is trying to counter a line of argument that seems to be being pushed to us as a public across maybe newspapers, the news channels and the radio. I'm not saying they're all exactly the same.
No, but they do have a very similar stance, don't they? And anyone that sort of questions it is seen to be a conspiracy theorist at some point, aren't they, you know?
And they start to burrow down on... They all start to repeat the same
narrative,
aspects
of
whatever it is. So with Ukraine, I mean, and it feels like you're getting pushed as a public towards supporting maybe Britain joining the war or NATO joining in or a no-fly zone. And that's always my motivation for coming to the table with Peter and trying to make something to question what. Or especially if I feel like I've got a clear argument against it, which I quite often do. If it involves war and the idea of going to war.
Yeah, it's always going to be, you know, try not to get in that position in the first place.
Yeah. But I mean, we're living in extreme emergency times, or however one wants to put it at the moment. So it's trying to find ways to express that and counteract it and get through. I mean, I always sort of think, because I'm so ancient, it's important to be able to get through to young people.
Yeah.
You know, they're the future, and their future's being completely fucked up by what's going on in the world, you know, in a big way now.
So, well, it feels like the younger people are a little more politically minded as they was a generation before,
even.
You know what I mean? Like, my kids sort of take notice of what's going on.
Yeah.
And they're only like sort of 15 and 18, but it's a 15-year-old I'm on about. But she will ask what's going on in the news as soon as she gets home. Maybe because there's this, that, you know, the big words of nuclear and World War III are being thrown about, you know. Mm. So you know, it's scary times.
Yeah.
And the last time that was happening was, what would it have been like?
In the 80s.
Yeah, 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
What about Iraq?
Was there any thought of World War III or nuclear bombs there?
No, I don't think it definitely wasn't projected in that way to the public. It wasn't projected as our problem in a way.
No.
It was sort of only in terms of we must send the troops over and must do this thing. You know, we're going to be...
Well, that's the thing that's been pulled up recently, isn't it? Because, you know, people are going, what about Syria? That was turned to fucking dust, wasn't it, you know?
Yeah.
But because they wasn't quite the same colour skin as us, possibly, or they wasn't as close to home as us, or on the same bit of land, you know.
Also, probably people didn't feel it as a threat, right? They didn't feel if that country gets boiled down into war, or if Iraq gets boiled down into war, it's not actually going to blow back on UK territory. Whereas I think... Ukraine, definitely, that's what people are scared of, I think.
Mm.
Are you making anything specific that's based around Ukraine, being it's only been about for a month or so, or the war has?
I've tried to respond by looking at our archive and pulling out sometimes materials and sometimes actual works that relate. Because our collaboration has always been... his starting point was the invasion of Iraq.
Yeah.
So then...
And how did it come about? Not Iraq. I know how that came about.
So big question.
The whole war. How did Tony Blair...
How did Kenard Phillips come to be?
It really came to be because I had a massive urgent need to do something about this imminent invasion. And I wasn't an artist at that time in the sense that I wasn't making to completion anything. I was very creative, but I wasn't an artist. I was doing all sorts of things, but I didn't have a, what do you call it, like a focused way of expressing myself,
where
it could actually be presented out to a public. Yeah. And then I was introduced to Peter by a mutual friend, Jenny Matthews, an amazing photographer.
Got you.
Maybe three, and maybe about 4 months after meeting him, bumped into him again. And by that time, it was. When was that? It was like. April. So it was like a month after the invasion in 2003. And I was just like. You know, I forced him to let me. I don't know. Like,
and what was you doing at the time then, if you wasn't an artist?
I was a printer. A printer by, like, that's how I made my living, was printing for photographers like Jenny Matthews was part of a cooperative called Network Photographers, who are all big social documentary photographers. So the content of what I was printing was always really you know, it was always about world events, world social justice and different parts of the world, different struggles.
Yeah.
So the content of what I was handling, all the material I was handling was right in there. And I was printing for their portfolios and their exhibition prints. So creatively, that's what I was... That was my outlet, was actually making amazing...
And you had the urge to create your own, or you just wanted to create something?
I wanted to express my anger.
Yeah.
And try and battle against what was actually happening, like genuinely with a conviction, like there's something that can be done to stop or alter, or and it was all in terms of public consciousness, public pressure, public being able to put pressure on political events, because you know I'm convinced that the public are it's the only place that can actually make a change, you know.
Yeah, collectively.
Yeah, collectively.
As long as there's not sort of too many fractured parties going against each other, but coming together, we've seen it on so many occasions, haven't we? When people unite and...
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only force for good change, you know.
And also, after the war the invasion started, then all the papers and everybody was just saying, oh, you know, we've got support, support them. And and there wasn't any real news coming out, was there?
There's no critique of
the people being killed by the hundred, you know. I mean, a lot of it didn't come out till WikiLeaks about the depth of it, the horror of it, you know, what they were doing, the US and the British, you know.
How imbalanced the war it was, which is...
So we did things like we were in an exhibition, we made posters, anti-war posters, on newsprint and gave them out to people to put up, you know, to try and, what do they say on them? To stop the, you know.
There were different montages. There were a set of new montages that we made together, and then they had the word stop.
Because the start of the change is getting people just to question what's happening anyway, because, you know, as you said at the start, you listen to the news, you've got it coming from all angles, and it's like a brainwashing of the same sort of narrative.
Yeah.
And then it only takes someone to just go, but have you seen this? Or have you thought about this? And then all of a sudden, that can sort of just grow.
It gives you a window, or it just gives you an opportunity to look in an opposite direction or a different direction, not necessarily opposite.
Because like, even at the moment, when in Ukraine, they mentioned about the... a school was hit, and obviously the maternity hospital.
Yeah.
And everyone's saying about war crime, which, yeah, I'm not arguing that, but fucking hell, when the amount of bombs that the US dropped on fucking schools, playgrounds even, you know, with
and
children playing in.
And Yemen, I mean,
and it was an accident,
which is British bombs made, you know, I mean, that's happening now. I mean, you know. Yeah,
but it's very hard to battle against the propaganda for the war in Yemen, because it's so like the connection between the UK and what happens in Yemen is kind of clouded by the fact that it's British armaments that are sold to Saudi Arabia, who then bombed Yemen. But the whole propagating of the news of that war, whenever there is any, when there isn't very much at all, it's layered with the reasons on the ground, which are so removed from public consciousness here that it's very hard for a British public to galvanise behind like an anti-war movement to stop that. But I mean, that's happening across the globe. These webs of connections that basically boil down to big corporate money to be made in fossil fuels and armaments, governments that are completely hooked. They're addicted to that structure of wealth making or economy. And then I guess the only other element is a public that either supports it through inaction or like through not protesting. Or they're just too beaten down and brutalised by their own political system that they don't. There's no chink of chance to stop it.
Mm. I mean, even looking at the fucking Boris that's in at the moment, it's just so much that they've done, even in the last 2 years through lockdown.
Oh. Mm.
And you go like, how can anyone? How can they be getting away with it? You know, giving billions to their friends and buddies,
and it's so blatant.
And it's
now
just,
with this,
but they're even
nigh
on admitting it. You know, it's coming out, and I mean, there's still people going, well, what other option have we got?
Yeah.
You know, what Labour at the moment is, well, fucking anything's better than what's in there. You know,
no, it's the most corrupt government. You know, I mean, he was in Saudi Arabia, wasn't he, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
On the day that there were a few more beheadings took place.
Was it the same day?
They beheaded three people whilst he was there, probably deliberately. But I think it was either 1 or 2 days before they'd had
the largest,
and that's the most people they've killed in one session in their history. They've never done that before.
It's scary shit, isn't it?
It's really, really, I think we're in really, really scary times.
It is the fact that people just... It feels like people don't care, or
there's a lack of understanding of what. How do we address it? How do we collectively start forming it, like organising against it? And that's really essential. We've got to do it.
When you first got together, what was the artworks that was created, first of all? How did that come about?
So,
we made work about.
And Peter had mentioned an idea when I'd first been introduced to him. I mean, had some conversations. He talked about, we were talking about Iraq and we were talking about the build-up. It was, this invasion was going to happen. And Peter had mentioned an idea he had about making works with medals. So at that point he was just talking about, he had his practice and was talking about what he was thinking about possibly making. And when I bumped into him the next time, said, what about that idea with the medals? Come on, you got to do it. I'll help you.
So he was trying to sort of kick him into action. Rally up the troop.
And so that's the first work that we made was this, and because I was a printer, that was the obvious way to collaborate.
Yeah.
So using scanners and digital printer and a lot of colour work in the print, like you make that as a big element of it. And it was montaging elements of war instead of the gold disc that you get for a medal. You have the ribbon, but then hanging off the bottom, elements of war. So it might have been, some of it was press photography of devastated landscape, devastated body. Some of it was armaments. And the way that Peter approached the technology was great because he was into the idea of pouring dust on a scanner, which is, you know, in any sort of computer technology, it's all about keeping it clean and dust-free as
break
possible.
The rules on the technology.
So I got a fast introduction into the anarchy of a messy painting-type studio, which
brilliant.
I loved. Yeah.
And was it quite shocking to see that? You know, to see someone come in and use materials like that?
Well, I mean, we were using them together, but it was more, it was great relief. It was huge relief for me, at last, someone who, you know, doesn't honour the sort of,
doesn't bow down to the
technology rules, you know, and the sort of, you must protect the equipment sort of thing, which, you know, it's a fine line because you've obviously don't want to break
the
equipment.
It's a tool for your work, isn't it?
But you don't want to break it.
Yeah. And how long after meeting did the photo op come about?
That was the next, that was those. That was one of those poster series that we talked, that Peter was saying, printed out on newsprint and handed out for free. So we made a series of montages very quickly, and photo op was one of them.
Yeah.
And it's surprising what, you know, you've obviously made a small body of work there to put out, and I mean that was just sensational, wasn't it?
It took time for that. I mean that took off because Banksy put it in Santa's Ghetto on Oxford Street on the window.
That was about a year later.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of people saw it. A lot of people photographed themselves with a mobile in front of him with his mobile, especially young people.
Well, and most importantly was that the press used that image for their journalistic pieces about Santa's Ghetto. They used photo op.
Yeah.
In the window as the sort of main photo. So then it got its blast of press attention, which was great, and then after that it got used more and more and more prolifically.
I mean, you put your work on the streets in the form of poster, so it gets, you know, it's not in a gallery on the wall, so there's, you know, so it's more than, well, it's everyone can see it.
Yeah.
It's when it gets picked up by the press.
Yeah.
Is that's when it gets to a whole different audience, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
Again, and a much bigger one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think with photo op, people still use it.
I think it's brilliant.
As a critical tool against Blair and the whole thing, you know. Yeah,
he's just
a war criminal.
Demon-like smile, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I think it's hard for that. I don't know. I think it's quite hard for that that particular montage to be read in a different way
definitely.
How we intended
it.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing about montages, it's quite difficult to change the meaning because the meaning has been put into the, combining the photographs together.
Yeah, so taking one image out.
So you're making a critique, yeah.
Did you have art in the home growing up?
Not me, no. But my mum did. My mum did do an Open University art history course at one point when I was very little, and apparently it would take me and my brother preschool around the. This is in Edinburgh, so there wasn't any contemporary galleries really there. But she was taking us around like the National Gallery, and apparently I used to start making Henry Moores out of my plasticine.
Oh, so you had an interest at an early age?
Yeah, but I don't. I was really. I don't know, kind of concert. I thought art was just something. I didn't. So when I left school, I didn't even know that there was such a thing as an art college.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure I'm correct when I say that. And I didn't know there were drama schools, and I was really into acting, and I wanted to do drama. But I only thought you could only do that, like if you could find a university that did drama. So I wasn't even aware there was such a thing as an art college.
It's funny, isn't it? From the working class, you're obviously coming from a working class background, the limitations within the art world, like you say, I wasn't aware of any of that. The only artwork I knew about really was album covers.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I just saw that as an image to go along with the albums that I was buying.
Yeah. No, I love having got older that I can now understand that you can use the term artist for like a huge range of creative output. Whereas I think I always thought artist just meant you make really old fashioned looking paintings or abstracts.
That was my problem, because when I discovered art when I was in prison, I fell in love with it. But the thing was, my idea of an artist was a sort of a white middle class person who spoke like a poet. I thought that was the only type of person, because stereotypically that's what you see, you know. And then it wasn't until Ray Richardson, who I mentioned earlier, wasn't until I saw him on the telly, and he's from Woolwich in South East London, and I was like, fucking hell, there's someone with an accent like mine, and he's making these paintings that I fell in love with before I even heard his voice anyway.
Then
all of a sudden I was like, fucking hell, if he can do it, you know, there's someone like me. And then it opens a door, and then you find out there's you know, because it's a world I didn't know, you know, it turns out there's so many people like me.
Because in the 80s there were a whole lot of, you know, working class students could go to art college, and that's how a lot of the music scene started in the colleges. And, you know, because there were grants and the fees were paid. So whereas now it's going much more back to being like for middle class and up, you know.
Did you have art in home growing up?
Well, my dad he'd wanted to be an artist, but he had to get a job. He went to art school for a year and then had to stop and get a job, so he went into advertising. And but I used to go to exhibitions with him and things, so I got into it, and then I started just painting, and I was about 14, so I managed to get to art school at 16, and then managed to have about 6 years at art school in different art schools.
Oh wow.
I was lucky. And of course it all got paid, you know. I mean, you know, one got a grant and you could live off, you know. And then you could squat at that time, so we didn't have outgoings, you know.
All of that, none of that is about anymore.
No,
is it?
It's not about.
You can't even squat anymore.
It'll come back. It'll have to come back. I mean, the state of the world, the impossibility of just surviving, even in a rich country like the UK.
Yeah.
You know, it's got such a mad. I mean, it's mad in the sense that it doesn't have to be like that. It feels really obvious that it doesn't have to be like that. But the way that the government, this administration, has squeezed like the people. The majority of people, probably, but the situation for the poorest in society is like become impossible again. Feels like it was like that when we were kids, maybe, Gary.
Yeah. No, definitely.
And it's got back to a level that's totally inhumane, but also totally unsustainable. So I'm sure there's, although now when things get criminalised, like squatting, how do you decriminalise something that's been criminalised? I don't know what that
process is. If it does come back, it generally comes back in a completely different form, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, round our way, there was even, you drive along and there'd be people in, like, living in tents,
mm-hmm.
you know, there'd be a row of half a dozen tents. And I was coming there one morning, dropping my wife off to work, and there was the fucking council, like, pulling up their tents while all the people had gone out. And I'd just, like, done a U-turn from, you know, where I was meant to be going, done a U-turn, and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? These people have gone out, this is their own.
Yeah.
And the guy's saying, well, sorry, mate, I've just been told to come and
That's
clear
it. Thing. It's always like, well, you know, the he would lose his job, maybe, if he didn't, or, you know, maybe the blowback on him. But at the same time, at some point, the stand has to be made, like, on every level.
I mean, look what happened when they squatted that building. Was it last week or week before?
Yeah, the oligarchs.
You know, the oligarchs. And then you got the fucking riot police arrived. You know, I've never seen so many police, so many vans, so many police with shields, you know, to get them out. I mean, it's just, you know, the powers of the state against for any form like that now is, and the police bill coming through, which is going to make, you know, like almost make demonstrating illegal if that all goes through.
It will.
Yeah.
It sounded like that it was getting disrupted at one point, but I think it is definitely going to go through now, isn't it?
I think I think it goes back to the Lords again, doesn't it? But it does sound like they've changed a few words and it's going to get through.
Because it was the Lords that pushed it away the first time, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it seems like everything that goes backwards and forwards by the second time
it goes through. They're just re-editing.
There's only so much that they can. There's only so much weight that they can push back on.
They've probably taken out a bit about shoot on sight.
Yeah.
You never know what the fucking Tories would put in.
Yeah.
When was it you decided you wanted to be an artist? Either of you?
Well, I've already said, like, that was, it was when Iraq was clearly going to get invaded that I felt I'd run out of every other possibility of coping, you know. So for me, it's like a pure need.
It's like the frustration building up, isn't it? And you need that little release and the creative.
Yeah.
The creative need is the outlet. And
Do you
know when it was you fancy?
Well, I started when I was about 14, deciding, because I was in the flat I had, there was a sort of coal hole that wasn't being used, a little shed on the ground floor, and I started painting in there, and then sort of went on painting.
What were you painting at that time?
I was doing figurative sort of cubist type stuff and went through different styles, And, you know, I started looking at a lot of art. And then I went to an art school at 16, which was great. And they had these sort of scholarships, so I could afford to go, it's a place called By, I'm sure.
I applied there when... That was one of the places I applied to.
Did you?
Yeah, and it's... What is it now? It's University of Middlesex.
Yeah, University of the Arts, London. Yeah, no, it's got destroyed. It was a great art school. It's completely anarchic,
When I went in there in, what was it, that would have been 2000, it was still By, I'm sure, then.
Yeah.
And, it had a proper good feel.
Yeah.
It felt like no other. I think it was independent, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, people were getting grants and things, but, loans, I suppose. Yeah.
Do you know of Cursor Arts, the prison arts?
Yeah.
I'm a trustee of that, and they have a massive exhibition every year up at the Royal Festival Hall. And the year before last, they just had to put laminates on the outside of the windows.
Mm.
And it was, you've got all this
and
prisoner art
towards it. And it's just, like their one
just like
possible...
Yeah, and as much as it, you know... That
there have been so many powerful... Like, I think about... I only saw your little picture, the skip with the... I think it's so powerful, that.
Mm.
And yet... It doesn't exist, you know, that should be...
Oh, it
should be in a museum.
It existed at the time.
Yeah, it's so powerful. But at least that's a work that could be recreated.
Yeah, definitely.
You know.
And it's, that was going to go outside the festival hall.
Was it?
Yeah, but they had... there was so much fucking bureaucracy about...
Having something outside on the ground.
And I was going, well, it's a skip. It's not. There's nothing special about it.
Yeah.
It's a skip. So you need a permit to put it outside. And they were saying, well, what if people climb in it and climb on it? And I was going, but it's still a skip. If you have a skip outside your house, You don't have to take on those. But
all
because
those liabilities.
But because it's on their land, on their property rather,
they
had to
it.
Sort of meet all those health and safety.
And they couldn't put it inside.
No, it wouldn't go in there.
It should be shown again somewhere.
Yeah. It's definitely going to get. Yeah, it's definitely going to get made again.
Yeah.
I've kept everything for it.
Have you? Yeah.
It was I was quite pleased with that one.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's a question I've got here, which is... what piece that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, either individually or as Kennard Phillips?
Well, I know it's incredibly painful to work with images of victims of war, so anything that involves the body in a war context I find really difficult, which is good because it should be difficult. Trying to think of specific works though.
Well, we did one we did a lot of really big ones there, which are up there rolled up, and there was one of the podium, an empty podium that was the presidential podium, and then all around it, and it's a big thing. I don't know how many, 5 metres or something long, 6 metres, and it's got pictures from Iraq sort of breaking through the surface of all these sort of atrocities that were being committed there. So I always think of that as a really powerful indictment. You know.
Was that intended for outside or in?
No, that was inside, yeah. And it got shown in Denmark, didn't it, most recently?
In the Jorn Museum in Jutland. And it's been in... They're really fragile. I mean, they're made of really fragile materials because they're made out of just newsprint.
Yeah.
And very, very thin, sort of acid-free paper. It's meant for wrapping expensive photographs in. But they're actually, and like Peter said, they're, 7 metres by 3 metres high? So when you unroll them, they're sort of museum-scale works. Wow. They're great, but made with really cheap materials. And they just roll up.
Well, newsprint is like 40 grams, isn't it?
Yeah, it's super lightweight. Yeah. Super lightweight. But we sort of paste layers and layers of newspaper and then print on blank sheets of newsprint or this very thin paper, this acid-free stuff, and then paste that on. So that becomes the surface work that we then work into. But you couldn't put them outside. So we always when we're making those, we knew they were going to be for some sort of indoor venue. So either a museum or a gallery or a public space of some sort.
Well, the artwork takes on a beautiful new life and power when it gets put outside as in a form of a poster, doesn't it? Because it gets put more in the public realm then.
Yeah.
And flying leaps with aid. I only came across it a couple of years ago, maybe it had been four years ago or so. When I first saw Flying Leaps putting their stuff out, and you know yours being amongst it, it's a completely different world, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's great. Aid is a fantastic guy. It's totally ethical, and his whole aim is to get this work out to as many people as possible, which he does. You know,
it works in wonderful. I was speaking to him yesterday, funnily enough, and he said to ask you what's happening with Owain.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm pronouncing it because it was only
Owain.
Owain, yeah.
So the good news is that Owain works in a school in, I can't remember, somewhere in South London. I can't remember the name of the school, but he is head maintenance team. So he was Owain's idea to put up some billboards on along one massive wall of the school, outdoor wall, and get some artwork up there. So he just pitched it to the headmaster.
How cool.
He was called Billy. Apparently I haven't met him. And he said, he said, yeah. And then Owain showed Billy our website, and Billy just picked this, what was actually the same image that Flying Leaps last did of our work, which is of the Virgin Mary with the CND symbol and with the Earth, that picture from space of the Earth as the face. And Billy picked that. And so Owain's, the news is that Owain has made three billboards, like three, what are they called? Eight sheets, four sheet billboards? Four anyway, sheet. They're average-sized ones. And they go along the side of the exterior wall that looks onto their playing fields.
Because when he sent me a message asking you what's happening with Owain, because it was a word I didn't know. I figured it was a, I didn't know if it was a person.
Be, yeah, or project. Yes. Or
so I didn't know what I was going to be asking. So it was a bit of a leap in the dark when I asked you, you know.
Flying leap.
But knowing Aid, of course. But knowing Aid, I knew it would have been something related to what you're doing. But
I love this project because it's instigated by a worker in a school. You know, not that I'm saying that being maintenance isn't professional.
I know,
but
exactly what you mean.
You know, it feels really grassrootsy, and it's just like, just do it, as opposed to lots of bureaucracy, red tape, which could easily happen in a school environment. It's like an institution, isn't it? So
I mean, for me personally, I feel so much more connected with something when it's come from somewhere like that.
Yeah.
You know, when it feels like you, just presuming that the person possibly isn't into art, all of a sudden they've been transformed.
Yeah.
Their mind's been transformed by something that they've seen.
Well,
and they want to do something creative if they're not in that field. I think.
And his investment in his workplace as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then, of course, these billboards, they'll be permanent. Our artworks will go on them first, but then we're already talking about potential for the kids then to do some workshop, for us to come in with the art teacher, do some workshop with the kids so that they can get their work up on those billboards. And then Flying Leaps and AIDS connection to the guys who actually print adverts for billboards, Build Hollywood, you know, part of it. Then, you know, for kids to see they'll probably make something on A4, scanned up, blown up.
Nice.
To billboard. I mean, it's a magic thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the sense of empowerment.
Right.
And they can focus on the issues that are important to them, you know, which is, that's what's so essential, that any sort of art experience, art workshop allows the participant to focus on what's meaningful to them.
And is it going to be on the outside of the school?
It's on the outside. I mean, I'm amazed. That's, but it is facing onto school ground as opposed to facing onto street side.
Okay.
Yeah, because I thought.
But even so, like having the kids involved and the kids doing something. It's that sort of thing that, you know, yourself, it can be so impressionable at that age that it could turn people's lives and attitudes.
It's something we haven't talked about, because we've a lot of our exhibitions, we do workshops with different groups, you know, who are either brought in by their carers or just school groups, and we get them making work, but actually as part of the exhibition. So the work goes into, we've done it a few times where the work actually ends up in our exhibition, so they get the same status as the artists.
Lovely.
And we've done a lot over the years, we've done a lot of shows like that, you know, and it's amazing what people, if they're given a bit of equipment, a printer and a scanner and magazines and newspapers, and can cut them up
and are sort of assistant, like we then work as assistants to them.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Or as, you know, as encourage them to
direct
us.
That's the thing, when most people are creative, it's just that they've built their own boundaries, and normally that boundary is so close to the heart.
Yeah.
As soon as you open it up a bit, and people go, I can do this, I can do it.
Yeah,
it's exactly
stuff starts to pour out.
That's how the Kessler thing has taken off, isn't it?
Exactly
prisons,
that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd never drawn or created anything at all until I went to prison.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then once I saw that I was okay with it, like, and it wasn't until my art went up on a wall in the Kursler, that made me feel a little bit that I was part of something new. A little bit of self-worth, you know. And as soon as that happened, I wanted a little bit more of that.
And that's what happens at, like, a museum. They tend to have, you know, they have education rooms which are half a mile away.
Totally hidden from the public.
Yeah, that are taken away from the public, and so they don't ever feel that their work, you know, is actually shown.
Part of the same thing.
Yeah,
but when you've got people like yourselves blowing smoke up your arse here, but your work is quite inspirational, and then to have the artists there with them, it's a huge,
and to show that you can make work about what's going on in their world. So the kids can make work about their own lives, and then, you know, they can use different techniques to actually explore their own lives, you know?
And get empowered about their frustrations with the shit that's been loaded on them.
Yeah.
And for anyone, it doesn't have to just be kids, but whatever anyone's deal is in life, and whatever is, you know, pushing against them, forms of authority or policymaker, whatever it is. Without getting all high blown like that, but you can push back, you know, with pictures and
the
creativity.
The image that you was talking about that's going on outside the school of yours.
Yeah, call it Peace on Earth.
Peace on Earth.
Yeah.
That's got a good story behind it as well, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we did it for a thing called Brighten Up London, Lighten Up London, I think it was called.
Yeah.
That Bob Geldof was doing for Christmas, I can't remember what year it was.
It was a long time ago, so it's hard to remember the actual setup of that. Sort of, it was like a corporate sponsored creative thing.
It was by Orange, wasn't it?
Orange sponsored it, and he asked some of his mates, so we got asked by Damon Albarn to do something. And they were all going to be projected, they were projected on buildings. And then with our one, we did that, and then we sort of didn't hear anything from them about what was happening.
Which building is it going on? I mean, it's getting closer and closer.
If we could just explain the image for people listening.
It's a painting in the National Gallery of Mary Magdalene. I'm not very good on.
Mary Magdalene,
and it's a portrait of her by a, I think it's 17th century, very beautiful colour with blues and. And we just changed the halo that she had into the peace symbol, the peace symbol.
And the face.
And the face was, like Kat said, it was the earth put in there. So it was a simple transposition.
It wasn't a shocking image as such.
Unless you're a devout Christian, I suppose
it might offend slightly.
But not if you actually allowed yourself. I mean, you'd be offended in the sense that it was a. What would you call it? A holy image disrupted.
But if you actually
then allowed your brain to ponder, well, what's it being disrupted by? Oh, it's the earth taking the pace of the body, and the halo is the peace symbol.
It doesn't get much more peaceful, and
it's not actually that far removed from what the original image subject matter is either. As in, I guess Mary represented in some way like mother or something to do with humankind.
Mother Earth and that. But considering you're known as sort of activist artist or protest artist, that's about as peaceful protest as you're going to get, isn't it?
And okay, a lot of the imagery that we have made down the years has a level of violence in it, but it's always because we're focusing on the arms trade or often focusing on the arms trade or violence done against populations or individuals. And we use...
I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't powerful, because it was very powerful, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, but maybe that's something for us to ruminate on as well, because... It's not always going to be like the representation of violence is going to be the most powerful pushback against violence. Yeah. It could be that more peaceful images that are less, you know, attacking on the eye and the psyche might actually give space to contemplate stuff better.
And where was it going to be shown? Was it in the National Gallery?
Was it going to be projected? It was a building down by the Thames. I can't remember what was that building. A good public view because it was right beside one of the bridges.
It was on the north side.
Yeah, it's near the bridge, isn't it, that goes over to Tay.
But it got,
I think, but on this side of it.
Not the little bridge, not the footbridge.
It was
a main traffic bridge that would have had like a really good.
Yeah.
And it got replaced by Nigella Lawson's mince pies, which is like really so weird because it wasn't even an artwork, it's just like a photograph of some mince pies. What?
Yeah. I know. It's bonkers.
They must have been desperate. There must have been like some.
I can't even imagine who it could have offended.
No, they said small children and grandmothers. They actually put that in a letter to The Guardian. Yeah, small children and grandmothers.
That's fucking crazy. Isn't
it is crazy.
And at the time, they were financing anti-censorship debates around universities.
Orange
were at the same time.
And they've put up Nigella Lawson's mince pies.
Instead of meaningful art.
You couldn't write it, could you?
I know.
Yeah. I mean, it reads like that. When was this? It was 2004 or something like that?
Yeah.
It was early doors, wasn't it?
It was almost 20 years ago.
But I mean, it's symptomatic when you think now, with hardly any public money going into galleries and, you know, public galleries and things, it's all sponsorship. And that comes with massive strings attached, you know, that you don't attack. I mean, even something like that, which is quite anodyne, like you say, in a sense. But if you attack anything particular, they just don't want to know.
I was just saying to Kat when you was answering the phone there, it was just such a peaceful, non-aggressive piece of work.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see what any kids or grandmothers would have found offensive.
No, right? I mean,
it's also happened with photo ops, didn't it? When the Imperial War Museum up north, they were going to put it on posters that went on bus shelter,
right,
wasn't it? And the people refused to put it up to own those.
JC Dassault, big ad space owners, big corporate company.
I mean, I can half understand people not wanting to step into the political realm. I don't agree with it, but I can understand people not wanting to sort of make any waves there. But a fucking painting of Mary with a CND.
But when you think about all the adverts for very violent movies in the underground
BAE
and what
systems.
Have you.
Yeah.
I mean, arms
manufacturing companies get to put their adverts, massive adverts, on billboards all up and down the country.
Yeah.
And they're mostly concentrated in London in wealthy areas like around Parliament and stuff like that. But they don't have imagery on it, of course, because they won't show you the results of what they're making, so they just have like their logo. But they're allowed to do that. I think it's nonsense not to let the Imperial War Museum show that image as their advert for the show, for the exhibition. And there's a lot of violence in art, you know, I mean, so it's not like they wouldn't show. I don't think there would be a picture that would not depict violence. In fact, we saw a Frederick Forsyth novel of a drone flying out of the picture into you as the audience, with an explosion going off behind it in a landscape that looked vaguely sort of deserty. So let's read Afghanistan or something. That was at the same time, and that was on a JC Dassault in the underground. And they said that they could not show pictures of violence in their public spaces,
which
we had it in front of us, so that was just bullshit.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, if they said that we don't want to put pictures of Blair up, that would have been quite understandable, wouldn't it?
Yeah!
We're not having him up on our billboards. Yeah, all right then, I'll go with
that. Share prices will go down immediately.
You was also going to have that image. We were just talking about projecting images. That image was projected as well, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We worked with some people who animated the Blair. Well, they animated the
plume.
Explosion.
Yeah.
And we put it up on when the Chilcot inquiry was going on the building next to it, which was, what's it called, that building? I can't remember. But it's
Queen Elizabeth? No, that's where the Chilcot inquiry was.
Yeah. And it stayed up. I mean, they got told to take it down after about 5 minutes.
No, it was up longer than that.
A bit longer.
Right. And it was winter, because it was February, I think, so it was...
Yeah.
Did we show it? We had it up at night and up in the morning. The idea was to have it up when he arrived, you know, in his...
Yeah.
And what is the offence? I know that people have been told to take those images down. What's the offence?
Yeah, it's very complex, isn't it? Because you're not damaging
the
building. No,
it's not graffiti.
No,
such.
But they have made a law now that to make it illegal. Quite recently, I think.
No, because then you'd have anyone who was putting up projections having to scarper with the massive projector and the vehicle without getting caught, which would be almost impossible, like if you were projecting something on Parliament.
Well, years ago, Gail Poulter, wasn't it? The model was projected onto Parliament, wasn't she?
That was an but that was an actual advert, was it?
I can't remember, but it was. I think it was done without permission, because I'm quite sure they got told to take it down.
Well, there's a group called Led by Donkeys on Instagram, and they're doing a lot of projected work.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's on Parliament half the time.
I don't know. But yeah, it's hard to find out what the offence is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's just that the owner of the building, or whoever's got the authority of the building, can ask you to stop, which is what happened when we were doing that one outside the Queen Elizabeth Hall. So, like, if you refuse to stop... then maybe it tips over and they can call the police.
But what a great image to have. The Chilcot Inquiry.
The famous one was an artist called Wadishko, who does amazing projection. And he was doing a show at the ICA, and he took his, which just up the road from Trafalgar Square, but he took his projector into Trafalgar Square and projected a swastika onto the South Africa house. This was during apartheid. And he stayed up about an hour. And it's become quite famous, you know, just a simple thing. Yeah.
You've done some amazing production work.
There's a little question here that I ask each artist, is if there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Group show.
Kathy Colwitz. She'd be one of mine, definitely.
Hannah Hock.
Hannah Hock, yeah.
Goya.
Goya, yeah.
I think that's the first time Goya's come up, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm amazed. That's amazing.
I think it is, but I've not done Jack Chapman yet.
No,
I think...
you don't. Probably for him.
Because the main ones that come up are Warhol, Bacon.
About Bruce Nauman's, he come up.
He has come up, but not as much as I would have liked.
No, I think he's fascinating.
He wrote to me when I was away.
Did he?
Yeah, I know. How cool's that?
That's amazing.
That is really cool. Really?
Yeah.
Where you at?
Yeah, I discovered, because I didn't really know his work.
Uh-huh.
Because when I was in jail, I didn't know... Sorry, keep fucking turning this around and me. Because I don't know... They were names to me. I had no idea where they were.
Well, I'm like that.
On the ladder.
I'm like that still.
So I think he was showing at the Haywood. And I sent a letter to him via the Haywood.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know if the Haywood was a gallery in a row of precincts of shops or if it was a... And I sent it there. And about 2 months later, I get this big catalogue with... a message from him in the front of it and a letter from him.
Wow, that's
great. And then about 6 months later, he'd had another show somewhere or something had happened. And he sent me a new catalogue through that I hadn't asked for, which I was...
That's great.
Because he was living on a ranch or something.
Yeah, he's got a ranch.
And it was in the letter he said that he's just putting together something at the ranch. And I knew nothing of what that was until I read this catalogue and it says you've got a ranch in the middle of
nowhere. Didn't you say that he works in a way that he has a, like he's got a studio and it's full of stuff.
Yeah, full of stuff.
And he just wanders around and then sort of takes
there's a great
enlightenment from stuff around him.
There's a great video on YouTube of it. It's only about a 5 minute one, but he just wanders around and says, and then I looked at this catalogue for animal parts and picks it up and drops it, because he doesn't talk about his work much, and doesn't give speeches.
I kind of identify with that idea of having material, or at least having materials. I mean, we work in that way, in the sense that we have a lot of our past works, or like bits of half started stuff, which will have a lot of press photography in it, and then there'll be something that we want to make work about, but the starting point is actually just sort of sifting through lots of stuff and then just trying things out.
Imagine being well known for sort of photo montage. It's like I had a friend who'd done a lot of collage, and she just had cut out images everywhere.
Yeah,
to do that. But do you think you'd get lost in a big studio?
I don't think so. I just have all this stuff.
we've had big studios.
We produced a lot of big stuff.
So at one point we moved out of this building, and then we moved into another building up more in Dalston, and had a big space. And it was like that. It was just like a spread of materials all over the place, and a bit of equipment. And we put up, we had some big walls, and that's when we made those big works with newspaper.
Yeah. What was it, just to make those works?
No, but that's what we ended up making whilst we were there. Then they put the rent up, and we had to, and then a place came up available here again. We had to run back here as fast as possible.
Do you find it helpful being around other artists, or do you not?
I like bumping into people in the corridor for the chat. I find it really, really important. I couldn't do a ranch in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's what people see this sort of thing as, these podcasts, when they're in their studio working, because most artists are quite solitary.
Yeah.
They've got two artists rabbiting in the background. It's as if they're just earwigging on the conversation outside the window, you know.
I've tried sharing studios with, you know, people that I'm not making work with, and I've discovered that I can't actually let my head go into the place it needs to go to make work if other people are around. So for me, it's like who I bump into in the corridor, that's really important. But
I'm like that with music. I can't have music on while I'm working because my mind goes into that.
I definitely prioritise people. It's like I can't ignore that they're there. But it's all right when we're making work together to share a studio.
Yeah, but I mean, it's when you're working together, it's like you're sort of one. The other person just physically.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, I spent many decades just working on my own. You know, it's a typical lonely activity, and suddenly having Kat to work with and argue with. I mean, it's.
I've hit a maniac banshee of energy screaming at you. We must do more!
It did sound like he was saying, my life was quiet.
It was.
I was plodding along.
It was. You hadn't done montage for a long time before.
A lot of things.
And then you come along.
What's really funny is that I didn't have any contact with the art world other than like the stuff that I used to go to all the openings to get the free booze in the East End, but when I met Peter, when we were introduced, I didn't have a background in art school. I didn't have a landscape in my head of artists, you know, and like you said, of at what level they were or what era even, and I had certainly never heard of Peter Kennard, and it was 2 years of working together before I think one day you said, well, look, I made this book once, or like his, and then it was a bit like it felt like it was like after 2 years of working non-stop together, it was like something happened in conversation one day, and I was like, oh, he's actually an artist. I mean, I knew he was in the sense he had a studio and he had paintbrushes and it smelt like art. But and my motivation was not as a coming from an art educated background and wanting to collaborate with something. It was just like pure sort of drive to create something that could go into the public that was anti-war.
Yeah.
And I knew that the way that he was making stuff, or the way he was talking anyway, sounded like there was a possibility that you could do that.
But
I didn't know about any of his montage work or any of that. Maybe that, I think it was after doing the award series of prints.
Yeah.
And I was like, right, what are we going to do next? And then an opportunity came up through a neighbour of putting in a proposal to do a thing in Norwich, do a well, be part of an exhibition in Norwich, and I grabbed that and I said, look, we've got to do this because we've got to do the next thing. And that was when we were discussing what to do, that was when we first came up with this idea of making an environment where we would make work, but also members of the public would make work, which has now become a much more developed thing that we do within exhibitions sometimes. But that was the point at which then Peter was saying, well, I've made montages in the past. Montage, what's that, I would say. even though we'd actually been making montage in a way with the prints, these ones with the medals, but I guess you hadn't been using the language that so I was like, but, and I'm still like that, I still don't have a clue what.
So is there much of a barrier or a line between the work of Cat Phillips, the work of Kennard Phillips, and the work of Peter Kennard?
The
Dalek. Kennard Phillips' work would be the best. No, I mean the joint work.
Yeah.
It would be the most dynamic and the most sort of.
And the most use of materials, probably.
And probably the best argued argument as well, if there's an argument in the works. Good. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there's two people arguing about it while they're making it, so it gets more sort of. You don't get away with so much if you're making. As when you're making on your own, you can just go, oh, that looks nice, or that sort of works, or I can't be bothered going further, and the other one complains, so you've got
something
further.
Give you a kick up the backside all the time. And have you got anything coming up at the moment?
We've got a thing in Poland.
We're sending work to Poland, I thought we should hand deliver it. I mean, we could. There's been a whole sort of argy-bargy backwards and forwards about about the transportation there. It's more to do with Brexit than the political situation at the moment and the war situation. But it just suddenly occurred to me, you probably get a Ryanair flight for £15 to crack off. Because it's works on newspaper. It's studies for Ahead that we made that are all of David Cameron on the Financial Times.
Yeah, I know.
In different iterations. Hung as a block, but so to transport, they're just like actually just a small box, or a couple of small boxes.
And that's for where? That's in Krakow.
It's in Krakow, and it's called Politics in Art, and it's a big museum show at MOCAK, it's called.
Nice.
Which I wouldn't know how to say its name in Polish. And it's on for a year.
Oh, wow.
That show is a big group show, big museum show. That they planned to have last year.
Oh, wow.
As a 6-month show. Was it last year? Was it even the year before? Because of pandemic, it got cancelled or postponed. And now it opens in May and it will run till April in 2023. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been cancelled because of what's going on. But it's obviously like really crazy times. I mean, Krakow's one of the cities in Poland that's got the most Ukrainian refugees in it at the moment. So it's quite exciting to know that things still continue and it's still deemed as important to push forward with cultural and art stuff, like even in total like social crisis.
And it is exactly that, isn't it, at the moment out there? So it is.
But I mean, the show's perfect for it because it's politics in art. Brilliant. So, yeah, but I really hope that we get to visit the show.
Yeah.
And where can people see the work of Kennard Phillips, be it website, social media?
Well, yeah, the website.
www.kennardphillips.com.
Yeah.
Problematic name, Kennard Phillips. It's got two N's, two
and
L's, and two P's at the end. And it sounds like an estate agent.
And there's an Instagram, isn't it?
There's an Instagram under the same name,
yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, that's all my questions asked. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gary. It's amazing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Valuable.
Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media.
anything is appreciated. But either way, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.